Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me today. My name is John Laffey. I am the ISMS Program Manager at Perry Johnson Registrars. And in today's presentation, we're going to look at some fundamental concepts for building your information security management system. All right, so today we're going to be looking at some of the requirements around defining your scope, how the risk assessment and treatment statement of applicability all work together, information assets, what they are and what you need to do with them according to the standard, as well as how to address hosted infrastructure and services as part of your ISMS. And then, as always, at the end, I will be happy to take and answer as many questions as I can. All right, so what does ISO 27001 require when defining your scope? So the standard talks about determining the boundaries and applicability of the information security management system. Additionally, the standard requires that you consider the external and internal issues that are relevant to your organization's purpose and that affect its ability to achieve the intended outcomes of its ISMS, the information security related requirements of the organization's interested parties, and the interfaces and dependencies between activities as performed by your organization and those that are performed by other organizations. And then lastly, the standard requires that this scope and scope-related information be available as documented information. So what do those requirements mean? Let's take a little bit deeper dive into some of those specific requirements. So the standard talks about determining the boundaries of applicability of the information security management system to establish its scope. These types of boundaries should include physical, informational, and organizational. When we're talking about physical boundaries, you can think of addresses of offices or buildings where the organizational activities are actually carried out. In terms of informational boundaries, you can think about the specific information handled by the organization that is desired to be in the scope of the ISMS. Additionally, this could be all the information an organization handles, but it's possible that an organization could just want to limit the scope of their system to specific types of information that's handled, maybe certain information that has higher security requirements surrounding it. And then organizational boundaries. So are we talking about only specific departments or functions included in the scope? Again, this is largely going to depend on the information that's in the scope of your ISMS and who can access it. So if you have systems that hold information that you want to be covered in the scope and folks can access it from all different departments, they're probably going to need to be included in the scope of the system. All right. So the standard also requires that the organization consider the external and internal issues that are relevant to the organization's purpose and that affect its ability to achieve the intended outcomes of the ISMS, as well as the information security related requirements of the organization's interested parties. So the standard requires that the organization consider external and internal issues that are relevant to the organization's purpose. So to give an example of an external issue, it could be a legislative or regulatory requirement applicable to your organization due to the industry or region your customers reside in. One such example would be GDPR. That could be an external issue relevant to an organization that collects information about individuals in the EU as part of their operations. So GDPR is a regulation from the EU that has a lot of rules and requirements surrounding how personal information has to be handled, stored, collected, deleted potentially upon request, as well as other things. So if your organization deals with that type of information, you're going to need to be aware of what those requirements are and ensure that you're meeting them. An internal issue, an example of an internal issue would be something related to what the purpose of the organization is. More specifically, if your organization develops software that it sells, utilizing outsourced developers could be an internal issue that is relevant to both your purpose and the ability of your ISMS to achieve its intended outcomes. Even more specifically, the issue could be ensuring that those outsourced developers are following or meeting your information security requirements in terms of the code they're producing, test data they may be using, the type of code scanning they're doing, ensuring that vulnerabilities are being identified and remediated before shipped, things of that nature. Additionally, the standard talks about determining the information security related requirements of your organization's interested party. An interested party is defined as a person or organization that can affect, be affected by, or perceive themselves to be affected by a decision or activity. It's defined in ISO 27000. Some examples of interested parties and their requirements could include the owners of an organization who may require that no information security related breaches take place that could cause financial and reputational damages to the organization. A regulatory body could be an interested party. And their requirements could include that you are complying with information security related legislation such as HIPAA. Additionally, customers are typically going to be an interested party when it comes to your information security management system. They're going to want to be confident that you're safeguarding their confidential or personal information as part of the business they're doing with you. They want to make sure that that information is being kept safe while you're the custodian of it. All right. Next, the standard talks about the interfaces and dependencies between activities performed by your organization and those that are performed by other organizations. Typically, in modern information systems, there are going to be portions that are provided by a third party. A basic example would be an internet provider. In this example, it's expected that the organization would at least be able to identify the points of demarcation between its internally managed systems and the provider's internet connection and account for any risk that may arise from the company receiving information across this link, with the organization having no direct control or ability to monitor the myriad number of devices that that information is passing over on its route from the sender. Now, obviously, there's things like encryption and a number of other mitigating safeguards that can be put in place, but the standard wants to make sure that the organization, when they're going through defining the scope of their ISMS, understands clearly where those boundaries are, where their control, where their ability to control and monitor the information on their systems is passed off to a third party. And obviously, I think hosted services, hosted infrastructure, platforms, these are all more being adopted more and more. And it's really important to understand who's responsible for what, and who is actually ensuring that data is being kept safe, regardless of where it currently is. If your organization is the one who is procuring those services, you still need to make sure that that information is meeting the requirements of your information security management system. Additionally, you need to identify the risks that arise from those interfaces and certainly consider the treatment options available for the organization for the different risks related to systems your organization has control of or those systems that you've are procuring services from third parties, like the hosted services I just mentioned. And additionally, the standard talks about the scope being available as documented information. It's pretty straightforward, but documented information could include written descriptions, charts and diagrams, network maps, lists, or any other method of describing the scope of the ISMS. It must be documented and it must be controlled per the requirements of the standard clause 7.5. All right, now let's talk a little bit about the impact the scope definition could have on your audit. So the definition of the scope is going to include the locations and number of people under the organization's control that are included in the system. The primary drivers of determining the duration of your certification audit are the risk level of the activities being performed, how complex the ISMS is, the number of in-scope employees, and number of locations. It's certainly highly recommended that you contact a registrar during the planning stages of implementing your system in order to ensure the scope of the ISMS can be agreed upon and to have a good idea of how long the certification process will take. All right, so risk assessment, risk treatment, and statement of applicability. The standard requires that an information security risk assessment process be defined and applied. That includes the risk acceptance criteria, as well as the criteria for performing information security risk assessments. The standard also requires that this process will result in an output of identifying information security risks within the scope of the ISMS, identifying the owners of those risks, analyzing the potential consequences and likelihood of the risk coming to fruition, and prioritizing the treatment of the risks. After risks have been identified, analyzed, and prioritized for treatment, the organization must utilize their risk treatment process and apply it to any unacceptable levels of risk identified. A part of this process must include determining all necessary controls that require implementation in order to treat those risks. And in the standard itself, there's an Annex A located toward the back of the document, which contains a comprehensive list of controls. And it's your responsibility to refer to those controls when you're going through your risk treatment process and determining which controls need to be implemented in the ISMS. And another way you can think about this is you can start from the list of controls and go through those and see if those apply to any aspect of your ISMS, as opposed to trying to get to them organically. Use that list as your starting point. Obviously, you're free to define additional controls that may not be listed in the Annex A, but your baseline should include considering every single control defined there and determining if it does apply to some risks that are present in your information security management system. After you go through that process, you're going to need to create a statement of applicability. Now, this is another required document. And basically, it needs to include all the controls for Annex A, justification on whether the control has been included or excluded, the current status of the implementation, and while it's not required, it's oftentimes nice to have a reference to some type of artifact or policy or procedure that kind of directs how that particular control is being implemented. And on this slide, I just made a kind of a basic example of what a statement of applicability could look like. Obviously, this would just be a small excerpt from it, but here you can see there's three controls listed. Those controls come right from Annex A. For an inclusion justification, for the first control, you see risk assessment results. So basically, that's indicating during our risk assessment, we identified some risks that we found having a classification scheme in place could treat. So the implementation status is we've implemented it, see policy XYZ, that could be your information classification policy. And then obviously there's no exclusion justification because it was not excluded. To summarize, your risk assessment identifies the information security risks that require treatment. When determining the controls necessary to treat your risk to an acceptable level, you need to reference all of the controls in Annex A. And document if they're applicable to you, justify their inclusion or exclusion, their current implementation status, and then document that you record this information on becomes your statement of applicability. And as an auditor, obviously, we're going to be very interested to understand if you are excluding controls, what that justification is. I've seen in my experiences, some confusion with clients who may be utilizing a number of different hosted services and thinking that certain controls aren't applicable to them because they've utilized these hosted services. And in general, that's not the case. Even if a third party is responsible for implementing those controls, they're still applicable to your ISMS, and you still need to be responsible for ensuring that the controls are implemented for your acceptable risk level. Okay, information assets. What are they and what does the standard require you to do with them? So information assets are comprised of the information an organization handles or processes, as well as the supporting systems that are utilized for the processing, storage, and transmission of that information. Assets can also include people in addition to the hardware, software, and networking equipment. Identifying and determining the value of an information asset in terms of criticality to business operations is a key component to an effective risk assessment process. Determining an asset's value, not just by the cost of procurement, but by the criticality to the organization, allows risks related to the asset to be properly evaluated for treatment. So in other words, it would make sense that if a similar risk was identified relating to the main operating system of an organization, it would be treated with a higher priority than risk to an internal system used to display upcoming holidays. So obviously, if a risk poses a bigger threat to an organization's ability to do work, it should be treated with a higher priority. And you need to define the value of an asset based, like I said, not just on how much it costs, but how critical it is to your organization. The standard also requires that an inventory of information assets is maintained, and that assets in the inventory have a designated owner. Now, that owner should ensure that the asset is inventoried, has appropriate classification of information, and define the access restrictions and handling procedures related to that asset. Another benefit of identifying your information assets is to ensure that when you're conducting your risk assessment, you are taking into account all the identified information assets and not overlooking any systems or potential threat vectors. By having asset owners assigned who are knowledgeable and familiar with the assets and the role they play in the organization overall, you have a great list of resources to consult with when conducting your risk assessment. Having a comprehensive and complete list of your assets also provides clarity and confidence in knowing exactly what information your organization has in its possession, ensuring you can identify all applicable security-related requirements to this information. So, a big challenge for a lot of organizations when they first go down the path of implementing an ISMS, it's just understanding exactly what information has accumulated over the years. I mean, and while a lot of this could be electronic, I mean, organizations can also have boxes and boxes of old records that they've kept for who knows why. But it's really important to understand the specific types of information you have so that you can identify any regulatory or legislative requirements associated with them, as well as give them a value and understand the overall risk of continuing to hold on to that information. And in a lot of cases, it makes sense to simply get rid of the information in a safe way. But it can be a big task, but it's a key step in being able to have an effective risk treatment plan in place. Okay, hosted services. So I touched on this a little bit earlier. Obviously, hosted services are utilized more and more. It's become a common practice for many organizations. And in some cases, the majority of an organization's information systems and processing may be taking place on these third-party provided platforms. In terms of the standard and its requirements, the most important thing to understand is that your organization is still responsible and required to ensure the protection of the information being processed and stored on those systems. So again, just because you're utilizing hosted services, it does not allow you to transfer your responsibility for the information security of the information that you're placing on those systems. Now, there can be contractual things in place. Third parties can, well, I'll wait till we get into that in the next slide, actually. Okay. So on-site visits to third-party facilities are not typically feasible or appropriate for the certification audit. You are going to want to be prepared to demonstrate whatever due diligence your organization has conducted in order to have confidence that the third-party platform is meeting your information security requirements. Again, that could be things like contractual language that you have in place with them. They may have ISO 27001 certification themselves. They may have SOC 2 Type 2 audits. There's a number of different attestation type documents that they can make available to you, but your auditor is going to be interested to know, what you looked at, what you vetted out prior to making the choice to utilize these third parties that made you feel confident that they meet your information security requirements. There's also controls in the standard and Annex A that speak to suppliers specifically and their information security systems, as well as monitoring and measuring their performance, and ensuring that information security related requirements are clearly spelled out and agreed upon in contracts or agreements. So there's controls specific to that that you need to go through and make sure if they apply to you are being implemented. Additionally, you're going to want to be prepared to demonstrate what controls you have implemented and are responsible for as they apply to the hosted platform. For example, if a third party is providing you with hosted infrastructure, it is still expected that you're considering all of the controls in Annex A. A more specific example would be related to physical security at the third party owned facilities where the systems are you are utilizing or physically housed. You must determine what your organization's requirements are in terms of physical security and be able to demonstrate how you are ensuring that they are being met by the third party. So if your physical security policy states that there must be different types of access control in place, you need to demonstrate how you are confident that the third party is meeting that requirement. And in summary, as an organization seeking ISO 27001 certification, you must still be responsible for and be able to demonstrate the manner in which information security threats are being identified and treated, whether it be on your own systems or those provided by third parties. Okay. So that is the end of this presentation. Again, these slides will be available on our website, pjr.com, and a recording of this webinar will be available on our YouTube channel within the next day or two. If you have any other questions that you don't want to ask right now, you can feel free to email me at jlaffey@pjr.com, and I'll be happy to respond to those. But at this point in time, if you did have any questions, please feel free to go ahead and ask them in the question tab. And I will do my very best to answer any and all questions you may have. Otherwise, I just want to thank everyone for joining. I appreciate the time. And again, please feel free to reach out to us if you have any questions or are interested in getting certified to ISO 27001. And again, please feel free to reach out to us if you have any questions or are interested in getting certified to ISO 27001. Have a great day.